Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast, round two this time, and I'm going to be joined by Matt Jones, writer for Whole Hog Sports. Last week, if you didn't get that episode, make sure to go back and listen. It was Tom Murphy, and Tom and I sat down and we talked about some of the great moments of the past decade, and you know, some of these are just things that come to the top of every Razorback fan's memory. Things like the Henry Heave, the 2010 Sugar Bowl, and then Tom was there to cover the 2018 College World Series, so he was there for almost 2 weeks, basically. And so if you didn't catch up with that podcast, make sure to go back and listen to that one. It was really good information. It'll be a nice trip down memory lane for us and Razorback fans. But this week, we got Matt Jones coming on. And Matt, you write a lot.
At all those events.
Yeah, exactly. He was at all those events talking. You know, he writes on wholehogsports.com. So we just wanted to start, and as we were trying to kind of weed through what we wanted to talk about, because as we said, Matt is there at almost everything, we decided that we would focus kind of on a baseball perspective here. So let's start at the beginning of the decade. And it seems it was 10 years ago, so some of this stuff almost just slips from your memory. Yeah. But the 2010 and 2011 seasons really ended in the same place, Matt.
Yeah, they did. They both ended in Tempe, Arizona, at Arizona State, at their old stadium. I think it was Packard Stadium on the Tempe campus. Really one of the – when you think about the history of Arizona State, it to have a stadium like they had for all those years, it just kind of blows your mind. And, you know, it's really eye-opening when you go out there too, when you're used to being around the SEC and you go to places like LSU and Alabama and Texas A&M and all these places. And I'm not talking about football. I'm talking about baseball. Those places will fill up for baseball games, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and you go on down the list. And then you go to a place like Arizona State, who early in the decade, they really had it rolling under Pat Murphy, and then Tim Esme replaced him after he was fired for some NCAA violations. You go there, it's like a 3,000-seat stadium, which in the Pac-12 is a big stadium, but it really is eye-opening just how much professional influence there is in a town like Phoenix. And you got a great program in Arizona State, and there's just not a lot of fan support. I remember Arkansas was playing Arizona State in the regional in 2011. It was the regional championship game. There must have been 600 open seats. And I remember Robbie Neiswanger, who wrote for the Arkansas News Bureau, was sitting next to me, and I looked at Robbie, and I said, can you imagine if this game was in Fayetteville tonight? The place would be packed. It would be overflow. There would be people being turned away at the gates. And but, yeah, both of those seasons ended in Tempe. It was hot. If I remember correctly, I think it was a little bit more hot for the regional than it was the super regional, and part of that had to do with the super regionals were night games, and so it cooled off a little bit relative to Arizona in June. It cooled off. It was cooler for those games. I remember the regional, we sat up on top of the press box. Go back to, you know, how much emphasis is put on college baseball in Arizona. And if I remember right about that press box in Arizona, there were 8 seats in the press box. So
8 seats.
Eight seats. There were 2 for home radio. There were 2 for away radio. There were 2 for television. Basically, 2 for television. Now, remember, in that time, not a lot of their games got televised.
Right.
So what they essentially did was they took away 2, you know, media seats and put TV there. And then there were the sports information directors for both teams and maybe a scorekeeper.
Yeah, somebody's got to keep the scoreboard or something, right?
Yeah, so maybe there were 10 seats in there. It was a very small press box, though. And so everybody else was up on top of the press box. In June, with the sun beating down in Phoenix, 110, 115 degrees, and it was a doubleheader the final day because Arkansas had gotten into the loser's bracket. They had lost to Charlotte, I believe, in the first game of the regional, and so they got put in the loser's bracket. On that Sunday, they had to play 2 games, and I remember in between games thinking my computer was going to blow up. Aaron Peters, who used to be on KNWA here in Northwest Arkansas, I remember he had a towel over his head sitting underneath this little desk that was on top. Basically, it was a folding table up on top of the press box, putting together his highlight package because it was so hard to see your computer and it was so hot. And, you know, certainly one of the hottest games that I've ever been to. And, yeah, there's all kinds of fun stories like that when you come to college baseball. I think the 2010 team gets forgotten at Arkansas because they didn't make the World Series. That was a really good baseball team. Andy Wilkins, James McCann, Drew Smiley, Zach Cox, Brett Eibner, Mike Bolsinger. A lot of really, really good players. DJ Baxendale was a freshman on that team. Really good team that I think kind of gets forgotten because it didn't make the College World Series. That's the only team that Dave has had since he's been at Arkansas that got to the Super Regional and didn't make it to Omaha.
Moving on now through the decade, all of a sudden there's a huge rule change that happens in college baseball. They start to move to these BB Corps bats.
Yeah, in 2011.
You're not hitting home runs anymore. And it was almost at the University of Arkansas. It's like Dave and his staff knew that this was coming because they did.
Yeah.
And they've just put a huge emphasis on pitching.
Yeah.
And it came out in that 2012 season with that team that if they allowed two runs, they were going to lose.
Yeah. And you really saw it in 2011 because that's when some of those pitchers like Ryan Stanek and Barrett Aston and Brandon Moore, they were all freshmen in 2011. Talk about Tempe. You really saw the potential in Ryan Stanek. In an elimination game there, they actually got rematched with Charlotte in the loser's bracket on a Sunday. And Ryan Stanek pitched 9 innings, pitched a complete game and sent them into, you know, pitched well enough that they didn't have to use all their arms. And it was like a perfect scenario going into that night game. Now, they lost to Arizona State, and Arizona State lost to Texas in the Super Regionals in Austin. But you could really see that there was going to be something special about Stanek, I thought. In that game in Tempe. And then, yeah, you're right, over the next 3-4 years, it became a pitching school. In 2013, they had a 1.89 team ERA. It was the lowest in 37 years in college baseball. Connecticut in, I think, 1976 had set the record, and that was the only program that had had a better ERA than Arkansas had in 2013. But there wasn't a lot of hitting. There weren't a lot of hitters that came through here in those years. In 2011, that was the first year after the bat change. Arkansas had hit 92 home runs in 2010, if I remember it right. And I think they hit like 48 in 2011. And a lot of those were James McCann. James McCann had this really great junior season before he got drafted in the second round by the Tigers. Had that walk-off home run against LSU that everyone remembers at Baum Stadium. That's probably one of the top five games that I can remember ever being at over there at Baum. And but, yeah, you saw a real lack of hitting there for a number of years. Matt Reynolds was here. He had some good seasons at the plate. Tyler Spoon had a really good year in there at one point. Brian Anderson had a pretty good year, I think, as a junior. But, man, outside of that, those were some lean years. That team in 2012 that went to the World Series, that was a pitching team. I mean, it was all pitching and defense. You remember they beat Baylor in the game 3 of the Super Regional 1-0 in 10 innings. One of the most incredible games I've ever been at because Randall Fant started the game for Arkansas, and he just kept putting them in these bad situations, would load the bases, and then he would get out of it. He would make a play, or someone behind him, a Tim Carver, a Bo Bigham, somebody like that would make a play. And it was just a really cool run for them to get into the World Series. They beat South Carolina in the second game of the World Series that year, broke South Carolina's 22-game NCAA tournament winning streak, and, of course, lost to South Carolina in the semifinals. But that team had a .281 batting average, and they made it basically to they were the number three team in the nation at the end, and had it not been for, you know, some questionable strike calls by Perry Costello, they might have been the national champion or the national runner-up with a .281 batting average. And it's really a testament to what Dave Jorn did with that pitching staff.
That team sticks out to me is that they did have the pitching. They had really what you needed that could be consistent going no matter really where you went, that you knew that these guys were only going to give up 2-3 runs in a game. Yeah. And it's a bitter ending for that team because you felt like if they could have won that South Carolina game, that, you know, they had an opportunity there for the national championship for sure.
That was the team that had a lot of games where they scored 1 or 2 runs. And I can't remember if it was the 2012 team, might have been the 13 team or the 14 team. There was a team in there that, if I remember right, they played 23 one-run games. 23, or maybe it was 1 and 2-run games. But it was like every game was tight. And so there was so much pressure put on that pitching staff. And we mentioned some of them, Aston and Moore and Baxendale, but, Colby Suggs was on those teams, turned into a great reliever. Nolan Sanburn was drafted after his sophomore year in 2011. I remember at Baylor, I remember watching him throw an 88-mile-an-hour changeup and thinking, oh, my God, It's incredible for a, you know, a college pitcher to have that type of arm strength, you know, and it was such a raw, you know, just such a great raw talent that he had. And yeah, that pitching staff was, I don't know that you'll ever see another one like it, because the balls have changed now to where you're starting to see the runs coming back in college baseball. The bats haven't really changed a whole lot. You know, they still got those BB core standards, but by lowering the seams on the baseball, it's made the baseballs jump off the bats quite a bit more. I think that happened in maybe Benintendi's the year that he won National Player of the Year was the year that they changed the baseballs. And so if you ever see a team have a sub-2 ERA again in college baseball, enjoy it, because it's not going to be one of those things that you see very often.
Yeah, it's a feat to make sure that you notice and really just watch in awe, because that is something that you want to happen. You mentioned Benintendi. Let's move ahead. We talked about the 2012 season. Then, you know, the Razorbacks are still going to the postseason. They, you know, aren't getting out of the regionals in 13 and 14. And then in 15, it's a team that, if you look at the trajectory, sometimes we forget, because now 5 years removed, we think of Andrew Benintendi on that team. He was the Golden Spikes winner. But that team was very, very close to not turning this thing around and not making the postseason. Halfway through the season, they were in the dumps, and then all of a sudden, they turned this thing around and went to the College World Series.
They went to Texas A&M, I think, in late April or early May, and A&M was the number one team in the country. And you think about just kind of some of the weird, quirky things in sports. There was a game two. A&M was up, I don't know, 7 runs, 8 runs, something like that, and maybe 6 runs. And it almost hit 5 innings, and I think the game might have been called after, not called, but delayed, postponed by rain, about maybe 4.5 innings after 4 innings or something like that. But it's 5 innings. It's an official game. Well, it didn't hit the 5th inning, or after it didn't finish the 5th inning at least. Arkansas comes back the next day, wins that game, and then they win a 7-inning game because of the way the SEC rule is written, that you have to play a 7-inning game if you're finishing up another one on Sunday, and all of a sudden they've won that series. And from there, they were hot as a pistol. They, if I remember right about that team, I think they won a couple of games in Hoover, went to Oklahoma State, swept through that regional.
The team in Hoover, wasn't that when Bobby Wernis hit a walk-off home run against Florida that was late?
I think that was that year.
Or it may have tied the game. I can't remember if it was a walk-off or not.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think it may have tied the game. But yeah, that team just – and it was pitching at the end of that year. You had a lot of pitchers step up who had some of the best games of their career. I think about a guy like James Teague was phenomenal during that run. Keaton McKinney was really good until he got hurt. Zach Jackson, that's whenever he really established himself as this dominant reliever. And that was probably the most surprising run to the World Series that I've seen, because you're right. You didn't expect just a whole lot out of that team. The expectations were, you know, a couple of years, a year before, when they had some pitchers like Trey Killian still on the team. But Benintendi played phenomenal. He'd broken the Hammett bone in his hand in 2014 before the season. And he never really got over it. Never got that swing back, got the power back, and made the decision not to go play summer baseball between 14 and 15. Stayed in Fayetteville, worked out with Mike Struhol, who was the strength coach at that time, and everybody could see this physical transformation. And then when the fall started, he just started, you know, lighting it up, took that into the spring and had this great season, you know, probably the best individual season, at least by a hitter, that Arkansas has ever had. And it's funny, now you see a lot of the best players, they don't go play summer baseball. It's still referred to as, I want to be on the Benny plan at Arkansas. I still hear that every now and then. That, you know, those players, they want to stay here. They want to get stronger. And they saw Benintendi have, you know, a big year after he did that. And, you know, I think we've seen it from some other players since then.
Is Benintendi the best player you've seen in person play college baseball?
I saw Alex Bregman play. Mm-hmm. Alex Bregman's really good baseball player. You know, my scope here is probably the last 12 years. Alex Bregman's really the one that comes to mind. Benintendi's certainly the best hitter I've seen from Arkansas. But, man, there have been some really good players in the SEC. Think about a Dansby Swanson played at Vanderbilt. I think Kumar Rocker, who's at Vanderbilt right now, I think he's exceptional.
You can't forget that Rutschman, who Arkansas played in the 2018 College World Series at Oregon
State. Adley Rutschman was number one overall pick. It's interesting because you get to see a lot of really good, really, really good baseball players. I was thinking about this as I was watching the national championship game between LSU and Clemson the other night. We saw Joe Burrow play here, and we've seen Vince Young come through, and we've seen Johnny Manziel come through. It's interesting being in the SEC, especially in football and baseball. You see some darn good players who go on to be, Cam Newton, who go on to be great pro players, and we've certainly seen that with baseball.
Moving on now. The 16 season was a landmark season for Dave Van Horn. First time as Arkansas Razorbacks head coach that they didn't make the postseason. And it was almost the same feeling around that 16 team as with the 15 team. Mm-hmm. They got about halfway, and you're just kind of wondering if you're an avid watcher and fan of the Razorbacks, like, all right, they're going to turn it on. Yeah. They're going to turn it on. Something's going to happen. This team is not going to break the record and the streak and not go to the postseason. And then they just didn't.
Yeah, So in 15, it was the A&M series that kind of was the turning point in that year. In 16, that was the turning point. They had A&M down, I think, in the eighth inning. And A&M came back and won the back end of a doubleheader, tied the series 1-1, and then won the series the next day. And that was actually the start of the 13-game losing streak at the end of the year. A lot of people forget that team was 26-16, Arkansas was, in late April. And they just tanked at the end of the year. I think what happened was the pitchers got tired. That pitching staff was made up, I'm not going to say almost entirely of freshmen, but largely of freshmen. Keaton McKinney couldn't pitch that year because he had the injury. If I remember right, Dominic Taccolini, that was the year that he was coming off the thoracic outlet syndrome, kind of limited him. And the pitchers, really the other pitchers that year, the other one who was established that year was Zach Jackson. And they ended up having to put him more in a starting role and not in that closing role where he had been so good the year before. But everybody else was Blaine Knight, Casey Murphy, Barrett Loesky, Jake Reindl, all these guys who ended up being phenomenal pitchers for Arkansas by the end of their career. Isaiah Campbell was a freshman on that team, and he got hurt early in the year, had some bone spurs in his elbow that kept him from playing, if I remember right. Maybe it was 17 that he got hurt. But they're just a young pitching staff. And you see this a lot of times when you're relying on young pitchers, they're going to wear out at the end of the year. It's the same thing if you're watching a young basketball team. Basketball players, they play 40 minutes in high school and they play maybe 30 games a year. Well, you get to 32 minutes in high school and you're playing 30 games a year, and you get to college and you're playing 40 minutes and you're playing 35, 40 games a year. You're going to wear out, there's an adjustment period there. And I think you see that with pitchers. And I think you saw that with Arkansas's team in 2016. Dave Jorn retired from college baseball after that year. I remember when he retired, he told me, he said, I left the next guy some really good freshman pitchers. There's about 6 or 7 freshman pitchers on this staff who I think are going to be really good. Well, it was Blaine Knight, Casey Murphy, Jake Reindl, Barrett Loesky, Isaiah Campbell, Cody Scroggins. He was right. There were some really, really good arms in that class. And there was just a blip on the radar. And I think you've seen with Arkansas since 16, almost like this renewed fire from the program, not just from the coaches, but from the players who were, a lot of those players who were on the 16 teams, like a Carson Shaddy. I remember talking to them when they went to Omaha 2 years later and saying, what happened? And they said, we were embarrassed. And we said, this is never going to happen again here. Learned from it, moved on. And, I think you can really see the program it was good before 2016. It's gone to almost an elite level, though, since that 2016 debacle, if you will. Dave Van Horn says that's the year we don't talk about around here. Since that year, it's gone to another level.
I was about to say, it seems like a switch almost flipped. This team was good. They were going, you know, think about that before that. They went to the College World Series in 04, 09, 12, 15, and then 16 hit. And as you said, a switch almost flipped. And not that it was Dave Jordan going out, but Dave Jordan did leave. There's new coaches that came in. And I think that almost like renewed energy in that clubhouse.
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things that happen. Tony Vitello was hired before the 2014 season. And where you, when in a college baseball, your classes are almost finished, you know, a year and a half, 2 years out. And so I think where you really saw Tony's influence in recruiting began around that 2016, 2017 timeframe. And Tony was an outstanding recruiter. And you're still seeing, you know, his fingerprints on the program with some of the older players who are in it. You combine that with that philosophy, you know, focus, I guess you will, on analytics that Wes Johnson brought, just a completely different kind of focus that they had in the pitching staff. The combination of Vitello's recruiting, Johnson's pitching expertise, you really saw a different kind of power element to this team. Not only in the mound, but we've seen power, you know, uptick at the plate too, and especially since Nate Thompson's come in. And then you combine that with the disappointment that was still very real from the 2016, the way it ended. It's just been kind of a perfect storm. And I think to Dave's credit, whether when it was Matt Deggs left and Todd Butler came in, or when Todd Butler left and Tony Vitello came in, or when Tony left and Nate Thompson came in, or when Jordan was replaced by Wes Johnson, or Wes Johnson was replaced by Matt Hobbs. Since Dave's been in Arkansas, when he's had to make an assistant coaching change, I don't think he's downgraded one time. Now, that's not to say that Nate Thompson can do everything that Tony did. I think Nate Thompson's an outstanding recruiter, and I think he might, and I think he's definitely a better hitting coach than Vitello was. I just don't see where they've downgraded when they've gone and hired assistant coaches, and that's a big thing that's happened since 16 too. Tony Vitello left. He was replaced by Nate Thompson, and Jorn has left, and they made a couple of outstanding pitching coach hires since then.
So moving on from that 16 season, we talked a lot about 18 on the last podcast with Tom. We might come back to them. I'm going to pose a question to you here later, Matt, that you may have to bring them back up. But let's move on now to the 2019 season, the one that just happened. This team lost some key pieces on the mound in Blaine Knight, and you didn't know if – what they were going to be. You know that they had Martin coming back. They had Kerstad coming back. They had some of those guys back, but you just didn't know what this team was going to be. And there was that big question mark in Isaiah Campbell. Mm-hmm. And Isaiah Campbell not only hit expectations, not only exceeded expectations, he blew the roof off of the expectations.
Yeah, he did that. But a lot of people forget the first game he couldn't make it out of the fifth inning. Or maybe he made it out of the fifth inning, but just barely. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh gosh, you know, this is the same old Isaiah. Well, that, you know, was wrong. And we talked about Benintendi, probably the best year that an Arkansas hitter has ever had. And there are some people who probably will go back to, you know, years that, you know, I don't know, Jeff King had, or, you know, Zach Cox had a great year. I think Benintendi had a great year because of the bats. You know, it was a different bat that he was playing with, and that's why I think that was the best year. But from a pitching standpoint, I don't know that there's ever been one better than Isaiah Campbell had last year. And I include Blaine Knight, you know, in that thinking. I think Isaiah had a better, and the stats really back it up. With the exception of win-loss, which is probably the worst indicator of a pitcher's success.
It is.
Everything else was better for Isaiah. The ERA was better. The strikeouts to walks were better. I believe that he was pitching longer into games than Blaine was pitching. I don't know that I said this after Blaine left. I don't know that we'll ever see that kind of starter again. Isaiah did it. I don't know that you're ever going to see, though, or maybe it might be a while before you see another starter come in and have the type of year Isaiah had. And it wasn't just the numbers. It was just how he adapted in each game, and he pitched well in each big game that he had to pitch in. LSU pitched great in that game. You think about TCU in the regional or Ole Miss in the super regional. Those were Herculean efforts almost. Florida State at the College World Series. I mean, what did he go, 8 innings, I think, and didn't give up a run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was incredible what Isaiah Campbell did last year. And I think the coaches saw it coming, though. And I remember talking to Dave after Isaiah had been drafted, I think the 26th round by the Angels. And just as a side story, I think a lot of people forget, or a lot of people don't really understand how the draft works. It doesn't mean that Isaiah was only a 26th round talent that year. It just means that he had basically given the clubs a dollar amount that said, I really want to go back to school. And when he did that, I remember talking to Dave, and Dave said, I think he's coming back, and I think he's going to be really good for us. You know, we just see some things starting to click with him that we think that, you know, he could be a good Friday night pitcher, or has the potential to be there if he does X, Y, and Z. And he did. And I'm almost speechless when I try to talk about Isaiah's season last year, because it was just so good. There's really not a lot you can say about it. Just go back and watch the clips. And I thought two of the best moments last year were when he came off the mound against TCU after 8 innings, and then he came off the mound after 8 2/3 against Ole Miss, and that moment where he raised his cap up to the crowd. That was a really cool moment. And you know, just what a way for him to end his career, at least pitching at home, to have those two performances. You'd be hard pressed to find any two better performances than that in the postseason that an Arkansas pitcher has ever had.
Yeah, Campbell was a huge, huge addition to that team. And you still have those guys that are going to be coming back for the 2020 season, and the guys like Martin and Kerstad. Mm-hmm. And expectations will be there. You know, whether or not this team is expected to go to the College World Series, I think that Dave Van Horn has just built this monster now.
Yeah, he has. It reminds me of Nolan's teams in the 90s. You know, Nolan always talked about you build the monster, then you got to feed it. And that's what Dave's done. But I think Dave really embraces that. And it's not going away with the type of recruiting they're doing right now. Assuming they can get the players to campus, getting a guy like Robert Moore on campus, I don't think you can just overstate how big that is and how it might help get a Nate Wogelmuth or a Caden Wallace or someone like that who's a, you know, big-time recruit, Nick Griffin, in that next class. I think that a lot of those guys played together. Team USA, other travel teams growing up, they want to play together in college baseball. And I think you're seeing a trend now to where it's more of these guys. If you're not an elite first-round talent that's going to get $1 million to $3 million straight out of high school, it's probably more beneficial for you to go to college.
Does that speak to the college game and how it is evolved? There's more exposure, first of all, than there was even 10 years ago with things like the SEC network, the ACC network. And then there's just more money involved.
The coaching is better. Okay. And that's where the money comes into. Also the facilities that the teams have built, you know, like what Arkansas is about to build with this $25 million, $27 million baseball facility that they're getting ready to break ground on. That helps. But I mean, look at what these schools like Arkansas and Ole Miss and South Carolina are paying their pitching coaches. Matt Hobbs is making $220,000 a year right now. He might make that in Major League Baseball. He might not. I mean, you've got Major League Baseball managers, really good ones, who are making $800,000 a year. And you're paying your SEC head coaches $1 million.
The manager of the Yankees wasn't making $1 million.
Exactly. And so and you see where, especially in the last 2 years, and Wes Johnson was a real impetus for this, but the success that he's had in Minnesota has made the MLB teams want to go back and try to hire college coaches. Matt Hobbs, you know, he had his chances this year. Not to say that the Yankees would have hired him, but they wanted to talk to him. The Giants wanted to talk to him, and he turned them down. Michigan's coach was talked to. There were other coaches who have been, you know, talked to by the pro teams. And maybe that's just to pick their brains and see what are you guys doing that's effective. But, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's a deal where we're going to see a trend in Major League Baseball that more teams are going to start trying to hire away college coaches the way the Twins did. And I just think the coaching has really gotten a lot better in the college game. These are coaches, whether it be Matt Hobbs at Arkansas or whoever, they could be minor league pitching coordinators. They could be minor league hitting coordinators. They could be potentially like what Wes is doing, a bench coach in the majors. And I think that you know, between that and you're seeing so like guys like Jackie Bradley Jr. and Alex Bregman and Andrew Benintendi, the you go on and on, Dansby Swanson, the path to the bigs is a lot quicker if you've gone and gotten those 2 or 3 years at an elite college baseball level, like playing in the SEC or maybe the Pac-12 and the ACC. And I think that is a trend, and I think you're going to continue to see it grow.
Tell me a little bit more. You've covered baseball for a while, and so you've gotten to know a little bit about Dave Van Horn. I mean, just from the amount of time that you've spent with him.
A little bit.
A lot of people see him as the stoic man on the top step, 1 foot on the top step, one in the step right below it, and with the sunglasses on, the Arkansas ball cap on.
Hands on the hips.
Yeah, just a stoic man. You know, the Carson Shaddy would imitate him sometimes during the 2018 run. Who, as you've gotten to know Dave, is that his personality?
Well, it's his game day persona, and you know, maybe even in his end season. But I think he's really a player's coach. And I think that, you know, maybe that doesn't come through when you just see, you know, that single shot of him standing up on the top step. I see a coach who's really good with his players, who builds really good relationships with his players, you know, who is a really good ambassador for the university and for the state. Loves the U of A. I mean, just absolutely loves the U of A. There's no doubt in my mind he could have left here a long time ago and been a head coach at an elite type program if he really, you know, if he really wanted that, if he would have sought that out. But Mike Nabors is a similar example right now with the women's basketball program. It's really a neat deal to see these guys who are from Arkansas. Dave's not from Arkansas, but he went to school at the U of A. Mike is from Greenwood, but these guys who are U of A bred, so to speak, and that's where they want to be, and they don't want to end their career anywhere else. And they're putting all of that expertise they have into where they played, or in Mike's case, where they went to school. And, you know, I do think you're right, though, that Dave is, he's different than maybe that persona that you just see on TV. I see him as a lot more of a – I see him smile. You know, people talk about – you never see Dave Van Horn smile. I see him smile a lot. You know, he really has fun with them at practice. You know, it's really engaging, interactive with the players. And I can't imagine that they could have found a better head coach for the program at the time that they found him.
Has he gotten a little less fiery over the years?
Oh, everybody likes to say that. I don't think he has.
Okay.
I don't think he has. I think maybe the rules have changed. You know, used to you could get unlimited ejections in a season. And now I think it's you get one freebie. And if you get a second, there's a suspension that's tied to it. Or, you know, even if you get a first one, and, you know, this happened to Tony Vitello when he was at Tennessee, maybe his first or second year. If you argue for too long, there's a 2-game suspension, I think, that comes with that. And so I think you kind of have to harness that a little bit. But I don't think the fire is left. No, absolutely not. And I don't think they would be winning if that fiery, you know, persona wasn't there still. I just think maybe it's not as outward as it used to be. I think that, you know, I'm not old by any stretch of the imagination, but even in myself, you know, I can see that, you know, as you get older, you get a little bit more mature in how you have your outburst, if you will. And, you know, I think maybe that's what you've seen with him is just, you know, he's gotten more mature as a head coach. and you don't see that outward expression as much.
Just a few more questions here, Matt, as we wrap it up on the Whole Hog podcast. We're going to cheat a little bit. We're going to include the 2009 team in here. But from 2009 until 2019, the Arkansas Razorbacks went to 5 College World Series, 09, 12, 15, 18, and 19. I think we all know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it to you anyway. Which team was the best out of all those?
Well, I mean, it had to be the 2018 team because of the way that they, the way that they finished their season. That was a great team. They had, such good players. I think you're going to see a lot of the players that were on that team go on and have good pro careers, whether it be the freshmen who were there that year, like Heston Kerstad and Casey Martin, maybe a Casey Opitz. I think Blaine Knight's got potential. I think Isaiah Campbell has a really great potential. Matt Cronin, too, of being, great big league players. That was the best team. It had to have been the best team. That was the most dominant team, at least. You can't say they were dominant because they had that weird road thing that went on that year where they didn't win any road series. But I thought they were a dominant team. I just thought that, some of those road series, quirky things happened in some of those games. And it was also a perfect storm that year that I think they played 3 national seeds plus LSU at their home parks in the year that they were national seeds. And that was a really good team. I think from a talent standpoint, from what they were able to accomplish, that had to be the best team that they've had so far. Probably the best team they've ever had in school history.
Runner-up, would you say, would be the 09 team? That team was pretty stout, too. Keuchel on the mound.
Yeah, I think about the Virginia game. I don't know if it would be runner-up, but, you think about the Virginia game when they had Keuchel, Bolsinger, and Smiley pitching to McCann. Those are 3 big league pitchers and a big league catcher, all in the same game. From a talent standpoint, that was a really good team. Zach Cox was a first-rounder. Andy Wilkins played in the big leagues. Brett Eibner played in the big leagues. That was a really talented team. But I still think 2010 might have been a more talented team because really all they lost off that 09 season was Keuchel. And they added some really good players for 2010, like Baxendale and Matt Reynolds. Matt Reynolds played in the big league some and is still playing in AAA. So that's why I say that 2010 team, I think, gets a little overlooked just because they didn't make it to the College World Series. They ran into a really good Arizona State team, and they lost 2 12-inning games. And that's the only reason I think we don't remember them as well as we do some of those others.
Yeah, the thing that sticks out to me in that 09 team is just, the major leaguers that you said they were on that team.
But that team wasn't that good. I mean, not to say it was a bad team. It was a weird year because they got ranked number 1 middle of the season, and then they just – fell off the face of the earth.
Because didn't they beat Arizona State in a midweek?
They beat Arizona State twice. Yeah, that was now we're going back into, I guess, 3 decades ago. Yeah. They beat Arizona State twice in the midweek, and both of those games were packed at Baum. And they were really nice weather. You didn't know what you were going to get late March, early April in a midweek, and it turned out to be 2 beautiful nights. And Arkansas won a couple of 1-run games against Arizona State. And, they won that one, and then – kind of late April, they began to really slip, and they lost their last 8 SEC games, went to Hoover, won a couple of times, went on the road, won 3 in Norman, won 2 in Tallahassee, and then won 2 in Omaha. A lot of people forget that. They beat Cal State Fullerton in Virginia, and they lost to LSU twice the year that LSU won the national championship.
Yeah, if that team didn't have to play LSU.
Yeah, but you've seen that. That's kind of been the hallmark of these Van Horn teams that we remember the best. You haven't seen it the last couple of years because they've been so good in the regular season that they played their games at home in the regional and the super regional, and they've been so good at home. That's really been something in the last 3 years that has been it's something I've really noticed is just the level of a home field advantage that Baum has become for the Razorbacks. Because they don't lose there very often. I think they've lost there maybe 12 times, 13 times in the last 3 years. That's incredible. There are teams who will lose 13 times at home this year. Good teams. Teams that might make the postseason that will lose a lot of game, double-digit games at home. Arkansas just doesn't lose at Baum very often. They don't lose a lot of series there. And that even goes back into, even in 16, they were winning a lot of home series, you know, up to a certain point. I think when Missouri came here, they'd won like 10 straight series at home that year. But going back to the original thought that I was having, when they've made the postseason a lot of times under Van Horn, it's because they've gone on the road and they've really grown as a team. And you see Arkansas, the way the SEC does its schedule is it really it focuses on final schedules at schools in putting together the end of year schedule, the regular season schedule. And so Arkansas is always on the road. People ask, why is Arkansas always on the road at the end of the year? Well, it has to do with how their final schedule relates to other final schedules. You've got to be at home when the finals are ending, which is always Mother's Day weekend at Arkansas. You know, so Arkansas is always playing a home game when they're having graduation on campus. Well, that's why. And then they go on the road at the end of the year. And it's something about it, whether they've gone to Knoxville or College Station or Athens, or Dave gets that team on the road. They go to that last regular season site. Then he takes them to Hoover. And sometimes they're on the road for like 12 or 13 days. They might come back and get a change of clothes, and then they're off again to Houston or Norman or Stillwater for a regional. And then a lot of times they're on the road for a super regional, Waco, Tallahassee. And something about being on the road together is made those teams come really close and get really good late in the year. And I think that's been something that's been kind of interesting for me to watch, is just how they've made the World Series a lot of times as a team that has had to, you know, do it the hard way by going to a couple of different sites before they get to Omaha.
The decade has ended. Arkansas is going into 2020. What was your you covered every single season this in that decade? What was your favorite game
to cover? Had to be the Missouri State game in 2017, the game that went till 3 o'clock in the morning. I think I'm one of the only sports writers who can ever say they've been at a 4 a.m. press conference, because that's when we were doing our interviews after that game. It was incredible. You remember that Arkansas was in the loser's bracket, and so they had to beat ORU that afternoon, and there had been storms in the area all weekend. The games have been being delayed and postponed. Arkansas's game against ORU, I think, was delayed by about 2 hours. And so they didn't finish that game until 6 o'clock, 6:30, somewhere in there. And so the Missouri State game was a late starting game as it was. And then the rain comes, like 10:35, 10:45, something like that. And it's like, surely, and we're looking at the radar. There was rain well back into Oklahoma. And you're looking at the radar saying, you know, surely this is it. I mean, they're going to come up here in 15 minutes and say, hey, you know, go home. We're going to resume this thing in the morning. And then if they have to play again tomorrow night, they will. Well, 15 minutes goes by, nothing. 30 minutes goes by, nothing. 45 minutes, nothing. You start to think, it's like, are they really going to restart this game? Are they really going to? And they did. And the game restarts at, I think, 12:05, 12:10, something like that in the morning. John Williams, who's the public address announcer, I remember he, you know, kind of said, it's breakfast at Baum, you know, good morning, everyone. And so it was just, you've never seen a game like that. I don't know if there's ever been a college baseball game like that. And then not just the time, but the way that game played out, a lot of people forget that after it restarted in the fourth inning, third inning, something like that, it took another 3+ hours to play. A lot of, you know, a lot of lead changes, a lot of game ties, things like that. And then when Jared Gates hit the home run that gave Arkansas a two-run advantage, I think it was a three-run advantage. I think they had already taken the lead. But when he gave him that home run that kind of gave him the cushion, there were 3,000 people in the stadium, something like that, maybe 35. I've never heard the stadium that loud. I've never heard the stadium that loud when there were 12,000 people in there. And I just think it was because for all the people who were still in the crowd, it was like this elation of, oh my God, I stayed here and look at what I'm seeing. You know, it paid off that I'm staying here. And you had so many people. I saw bank executives. I saw people who owned, small businesses leaving the ballpark at, 3:15 that morning, who had to be at work at 8:00. And they were coming back out the next night. And it was just such a really neat thing to see because you're never going to see another game like that. For me personally, I got home about 4:15, 4:30, and I wrote my story. And I think I hit published or had a game story, but then I wrote kind of a commentary on the night. I think I hit published about 8 a.m. and crashed for about 4 hours. And the next night was really rough because I don't remember a lot about that one. I didn't sleep a lot. It was hot, and that I don't remember a lot about Missouri State eliminating Arkansas, but I remember, and I don't think I'll ever forget. And I don't think anyone who was ever there will ever forget being there at 3 a.m. in the rain and Arkansas beating Missouri State. That was even if Missouri State had won that game, I still think you remember that game because you're just never going to see another game like that.
Matt, it was a pleasure to talk to you here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Tons of information, all. We kind of really went on the Arkansas baseball stuff, and it was so good to just get some insider information about what you've seen over the past decade. It can't have a really long answer here, Matt, but I do want to ask you before we get off, looking ahead to 2020, in these next 10 years, do you see this program being set up to where they win that national title?
Well, they're going to be in position to be a national championship contender. The problem is that you have so many other teams that are doing really well right now. I mean, you look around college baseball, there's 6, 7, 8 teams that are like Arkansas, even some that maybe you don't think about, like a Texas Tech, who keeps getting back to Omaha almost every year, and they're set up to have great teams. But with the way that Arkansas has been recruiting, they're going to be in position to, give themselves a shot to win a national championship. We'll see. I think I read in the Omaha World Herald when Nebraska played Arkansas once, one of the World Herald guys came down and interviewed Van Horn, and he said, "I'm going to win this damn thing one day." And I just think that, there's that drive that they're going to win this thing, and maybe it never happens. Maybe Dave has the same faith that Norm DeBrien had, and a second-place team is going to be the best team that he ever had. But I think that with there's that drive – and with the way they've been recruiting and the facilities and the resources that they put into their program, they're going to have as good of a chance to win a national championship in the next 5 to 10 years as anyone in the country.
All right, Matt. Thanks so much. Like I said, a ton of good information, and you can check out all of Matt's work on wholehogsports.com. He's writing a preview right now for the Arkansas baseball in 2020, so he will get you set. And those expectations, if you're a Razorback fan out there, you can just have them increase and increase all throughout. Thanks, Matt.